Hello, and welcome to Dragonfly Tales, a story podcast with me, Leo, and Emily.
Hello, and each episode will tell you a story from around the world and share some fun and silly things with you. So, we have a special episode, don't we, Leo?
Oh, yes, I'm so excited.
Yes, we went to Ireland.
Yeah, it was amazing.
It really was. We visited the capital city of Ireland. You know what that is, Leo?
Dublin.
And then we travelled all the way across to the west coast to be near Loch Mask. And we've got lots of information about Loch Mask coming up. But first of all, Leo, what did we do in Dublin?
Well, we visited Dublin Castle, which
was amazing. I didn't even know Dublin had a castle.
Me neither, but it was beautiful, especially the gardens. There was nature everywhere.
Yeah, they have lovely gardens at Dublin Castle. What else did we do?
We also saw the River Liffey that runs through the middle of Dublin.
Yeah, we did. And we walked across the Halfpenny Bridge, do you remember?
Yeah, we took some cool pictures up there.
Yeah. What else?
We went into Trinity College and saw the Book of Kells.
The Book of Kells. That's supposed to be one of the most beautiful books in the whole world. What did it look like, Leo?
It's a really old religious book with amazing patterns and awesome imagery of lions and dragons.
That's right. And also, we went on the Dark Dublin Tour.
Yes, we were going through the alleyways and dark areas of Dublin. Very gory stories. But
yeah, they were for older kids, weren't they?
Yeah, but it was good all the same.
It was really, really good. And actually, we found out what Dublin means in Irish, don't we?
Yeah, it means black pool.
Black pool, the dark pool. Really, really lots of fun we had in Dublin. And then we travelled across the country to the west to stay near Loch Mask in County Mayo. It was beautiful, wasn't it, Leo?
Yeah, it was absolutely amazing.
What's a loch?
It's like this enormous lake that spans for miles and miles.
Yeah, it almost looks like the sea, but it's not. It's fresh water, isn't it?
Yeah.
What did we do?
Well, I remember in the early morning we went swimming.
Oh, gosh, yeah, we actually got into the lake. We were very, very careful and we didn't go too far. But what was it like in the water?
It was freezing. It took me a bunch of tries to get even into the lake.
I know. You put your toe into the water and then you ran away. Do you remember?
Yeah.
We saw loads of nature there as well, didn't we?
Oh, yeah, the forests that surrounded the cabin were amazing and beautiful.
Yeah, lots of horses, lots of birds, and lots of fish. We had a go, didn't we?
Yeah, we didn't catch anything, but it was still really, really fun.
It was really fun, but no, we didn't catch any fishies. And the people were just lovely, weren't they?
Yeah, the people were really friendly there. It's a really nice place to stay, County Mayo. I definitely recommend it.
Yeah, and because we've been on such an adventure, we have two stories this episode. One from me and one from Leo.
Yes.
So, Leo, what's your story?
Well, Emily, my story is actually true.
No way.
So you know Dublin has a castle?
Yeah, we went there.
But did you know that Dublin Castle used to be the home of the Irish crown jewels?
No. We never saw any crown jewels at the castle.
Well, that's because they're gone.
What?
They were stolen! Dun, dun,
dun. Dun, dun, dun.
In July 1907, the Irish crown jewels were stolen from Dublin Castle.
Hang on. Right. Now, we've been to the Tower of London, haven't we, to see the British crown jewels, and there is just no way anyone could steal them. The security's too good.
Well, of course it is now, but in 1907, in Dublin, it was a completely different story. And it's all to do with the man named Arthur Vickers.
Arthur Vickers?
He was in charge of looking after the Irish crown jewels.
Well, he didn't do a very good job.
You can say that again.
Okay. He didn't do a very good job.
No, he didn't. He wanted to be very, very important and had been asking for a promotion for years and years and years. And eventually the bosses at the castle put him in charge of the crown jewels.
That's a big promotion.
Yep, and his office was moved into the Great Bedford Tower in the castle, which was like the fanciest and most important place in all of Dublin City.
Oh yeah, we took a picture, didn't we, of Bedford Tower?
We did. Now, Mr. Vickers was a bit of a show-off, and he had a big collection of museum artefacts and rare books and other bits of treasure.
Ooh.
And he was always inviting important people to parties and showing him all the cool stuff he'd collected.
Is that such a good idea, to be showing random people all your precious stuff?
Well, you'll see. So he ordered that the Irish crown jewels were moved to his new office in the tower because he was in charge of them.
Oh, so I bet he wanted to show off the crown jewels because he was their new keeper.
Exactly.
What did these Irish crown jewels look like?
Well, the Irish crown jewels were also called the Star of St. Patrick.
Oh, because St. Patrick is the patron saint of Ireland.
Yeah, but they didn't belong to the Irish.
What?
They actually belong to the British king. The Irish don't have a king or queen anymore.
Oh, a bit like America.
Yeah, but when the British king would come to visit Ireland, he would get to wear these special jewels at great banquets and parties and other special occasions.
So, what did they look like?
I'm getting to that. The Star of St. Patrick was about the size of your hand.
Wow.
And it was made from 50 Brazilian diamonds.
What?
A shamrock of green emeralds.
Oh, wow.
And a cross made of rubies.
This sounds beautiful.
It definitely was. It would be worn like a big, beautiful badge on the king's uniform.
Oh, how fancy. So, how much was this Star of St. Patrick worth?
I mean, well, today, it would be worth millions.
Whoa. Okay, so come on, what happened?
So remember I said that Arthur Vickers wanted to move the jewels to his new office?
Yeah.
He had a really, really strong safe made that was to go inside a strong room in the tower for extra security.
Well, that sounds good.
Just one problem. The new safe didn't fit through the door.
Uh-oh.
So the safe was placed in a room outside the special strong room, and the jewels were placed in the safe.
No, I don't like the sound of this.
Yup. Now, Arthur Vickers, he was always showing off and having parties and letting people come in and see the jewels. Well, one morning, the cleaning lady called Mary came into the office and she noticed that the door of the room was open.
No.
She noticed the door of the safe was open.
No.
She ran to tell Mr. Vickers, who was snoring in bed. He came running to see. The door of the safe was open, and the strong box inside of the safe wasn't locked either.
No.
He opened the box and it was empty!
Dun, dun, dun!
And to make matters worse, the King of England, Edward VII, was arriving the next day.
Oh, disaster!
So Vickers had to tell the authorities, and there was a massive search inside of the castle, and then a massive search of the entirety of Dublin.
Wow.
They called in detectives and investigators, and they eventually had to tell the king.
Yeah, that's quite embarrassing.
And the king sent detectives and investigators, and the first person that they questioned was Arthur Vickers.
Well, of course. Maybe he stole them.
Well, that's what everyone thought at first, but they couldn't find any evidence. And he was so upset and scared, eventually they realised that he was just a bit of a silly show-off. But someone could have known and tricked him into showing them where the jewels were.
Oh, and come back later to steal them?
Exactly.
What happened next?
Well, poor Vickers was fired from his job and spent the rest of his life embarrassed and ashamed.
Oh, dear. I feel a bit sorry for him now.
Yeah. And the king was very embarrassed too and told everybody not to mention it.
But, well, did they ever catch the thief?
Well, no.
What?! Don't tell me that the Irish crown jewels are still missing.
Yep. They never caught the thief and they never found the Irish crown jewels. There's still £1,000 reward for their safe return. And if you speak to some Irish people in Dublin, they'll tell you that they know who stole the jewels, but will never tell who.
Oh, I don't believe that.
The mystery of the stolen Irish crown jewels is unsolved to this very day.
Wow. Oh, Leo, that was an incredible story. True story.
I know, right? We have to put a picture of them in the group.
Yeah, we'll find a picture of the Irish crown jewels and we'll put it in the Facebook group so that people can see. Oh, Leo, that was brilliant. I had no idea about that. Thank you so much for telling us that mysterious true story.
As always, you're welcome.
Thank you.
So I think it's time for some shout-outs.
Oh, and we've got tons of shout-outs, and we've actually got loads of new listeners. Since we joined our platform Megaphone, we've been seeing lots and lots of downloads. So welcome to everyone who's joining us for the first time. And here come some shout-outs. Who have we got first, Leo?
Well, firstly, we have Tula and Bodhi. They've listened to our stories for almost the entire day, way up in northern Canada.
Oh, brilliant. Hi, Tula.
Hi, Tula.
Hi, Bodhi. Thanks for listening.
Next, we have Hugh, who's going to be 8 in May. Bo, who's 4, in Portola Valley, California. And their favourite story is a tie between Mama Draga and Perseus and Medusa.
Oh, I love both of those. Yep. Hi, Hugh.
Hi, Hugh.
Hi, Bo. Thanks for listening.
Here's a shout-out for Pearl from Decorah, Iowa, USA.
Oh, hi, Pearl. Thanks for listening.
Next, here's a shout-out to Tuji, who is 6, turning 7 in June, and TJ, who is 4, in Nairobi, Kenya.
Whoa, people listening in Africa. Hi, Tuji. Hi, TJ. Thanks for listening.
Now we have a shout-out for Mary Adeline, who's 5, in South Carolina, USA. And she loves stories about giants.
Oh, so do I. Hi, Mary Adeline.
Hi, Mary Adeline.
Thanks for listening.
Here's a shout-out to Max Morgan from Portland, Oregon.
Oh, hi, Max Morgan.
Hi, Max Morgan.
Thanks for listening.
Next, this shout-out is for Nara, who is 7, and her cat, Daisy, from Somerset.
Oh, hi,
hi Nara.
Nara. Meow, meow, Daisy.
Meow, meow, Daisy.
Thanks for listening.
Here's a shout-out to Nelly, who is 7, in Stockland, Devon. And she tells our stories at Story Club in her school.
Oh, brilliant. Well done, Nelly. Thanks for listening.
Here's a birthday shout-out to Alex, who is turning 8, and Luca in Greenwich.
Oh, I love a birthday.
Happy birthday, Alex.
Hi, Luca. Thanks for listening.
And finally, we have a shout-out for Gwen and Senna in Hertfordshire.
Oh, super fans. Hi, Gwen.
Hi, Senna.
Thanks for listening. Oh, Leo, that was brilliant. And remember, if you at home would like a shout-out, then all you have to do is let us know in the Dragonfly Tales Facebook group, or you can email us at emilydragonflytales@gmail.com.
Tell us your name and your age, please.
Name, age, and your town, too. And we'll be sure to get to you.
So, Emily, what's your story today?
Well, Leo, you remember that we went to Loch Mask in County Mayo? Well, my story is about a creature that dwells in the deep lakes of Ireland and Scotland. And as we said, the lakes are called lochs. The water is freezing cold, as we discovered, because we did go for a dip in Loch Mask.
Yeah, I've never been in water so cold, but we felt amazing afterwards.
Yeah, we did. We felt very revived. And we didn't swim out very far, because lakes can be extremely unpredictable and you must never go out swimming in them without someone experienced with you. Now, because lochs are very, very big and very, very ancient, they don't look like normal lakes. They sometimes look like the sea. They can be very stormy and wavy, but also very peaceful and still. They stretch for miles and miles, and many of the lochs have underground caves beneath.
So anything could be living at the bottom, like the Loch Ness Monster.
Exactly. In fact, that's a really, really good example of a monster in a loch. There are lots of stories of sightings of prehistoric-looking creatures living in these ancient waters. One such story comes from Scotland and is about a creature called a kelpie. It's an ancient, shape-shifting monster and it's very dangerous.
How come?
Well, when the kelpie is on the shore, it looks like the most beautiful white horse you've ever seen. But if you climb on its back, you can't get off. It will ride you into the lake and you never come out again.
That's really scary.
Yeah, there's an Irish version of this mythological creature too. It's not called a kelpie, it's called the Ask Ishka, the water horse. And there have been sightings of this creature at the very loch we were staying by. There is even a story about meeting the Ask Ishka. Would you like to hear it, Leo?
I don't know. I don't like the sound of this.
It does sound quite scary, doesn't it? But I promise you, and I promise the listeners as well, even though the story gets a bit scary, it will be all right in the end. Okay?
Okay.
So how do you think we should start our story?
I think we should start. It was a beautiful day on the banks of the mysterious Loch Mask.
Excellent. It was a beautiful day on the banks of mysterious Loch Mask. It was so clear you could see right across the huge stretch of water to the villages and mountains on the other side, 10 miles away. A brother and sister had headed down to the waterside to catch fish, look for snails, and skip stones across the water. Today the loch was perfect for stone skipping. The water was smooth as glass, the sunlight sparkling on the surface. Leo, have you ever tried skipping a stone across the water?
Yeah, there's a real trick to it.
It's hard, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. You have to choose a smooth, round and flat pebble about the size of your palm, and you have to throw it just right. And if you do, you can make it skip across the water before it sinks.
Yeah, it's tricky. How many skips have you managed?
Well, the most I've managed was one. I'm not very good, and I've failed a load of times too. It's really fun, though.
Yeah, it is. Well, Fergus, the older brother, was pretty good at it. He'd managed 3 skips in one go. Leo, would you be Fergus?
Okay. Look, Cara, but you can't beat that.
But Cara wasn't doing very well. She tried and tried, but every time she threw her stone, it just sank to the bottom with a plop. Oh, not again. Oh, it's too hard, Fergus.
Come on, that's because you're not doing it right. You have to throw it like this, sort of like a backwards frisbee. Whoa, a 4. Wait until I tell Granda this.
The children had come to spend time with her granny and Granda, who had lived by the loch all their lives. They were off in the town and had given the children a little packed lunch, and Granny had given Fergus the old back door key on a piece of string to wear around his neck. Cara soon got bored of skipping stones and wandered off along the banks of the loch with her little bucket. She watched the beautiful cormorant birds floating on the gentle waves, occasionally disappearing under the water to dive for darting silver fish. Cara sat down and picked up a bit of slimy green water weed and tossed it into the loch. A mist was rolling in now, and she couldn't see the mountains on the other side, just the water stretching out into white nothingness. Fergus, can we go home now?
Not until I get a 5, Cara.
Just then, Cara saw something further away along the shoreline. A horse. A beautiful white horse with a shining mane. It had a saddle on its back.
Oh, no.
Oh, you beauty! Cara sprang up and began to walk slowly toward the horse along the shore, away from Fergus. As she got closer, the horse stopped nibbling the mossy rocks and looked up. It nodded its head gently, making welcoming sounds. Where did you come from, pretty horse? Are you lost? Slowly the white horse came over to Cara, its great hooves gently crunching over the sand and shingle. Cara noticed that it didn't wear horseshoes. It came right up to her and nuzzled her affectionately. She stroked its velvety muzzle and made cooing noises. The horse's mane was all wet and tangled, which was very strange. There had been no rain for 2 days. "Oh, you poor thing, let me help." Kara gently used her little fingers like a comb and began to untangle the white mane, which was full of slimy waterweed. "That's strange. Have you been swimming, horsey?" When she'd untangled its mane, she patted down its flanks and looked at the saddle on its back. It was made of soft leather, delicately stitched. But no metal stirrups hung down. Even stranger. Now, Kara had been riding horses since she was a little girl. She knew that horses had metal stirrups attached to their saddles and bridles on their heads with metal bits in their mouths. She also knew how to ride a horse bareback, though, using her heels to guide it. She glanced down the shore. Fergus was still skipping stones and cheering to himself.
"Woohoo! That's 6 now!"
"You don't mind if I have a wee ride on your back, do you, pretty horsey?"
"That's not a good idea, Kara. I don't think it's a horse at all."
The horse gently whinnied, so Kara reached up to grab the pommel of the saddle, but she was too wee, and the horse was too tall. As if it realised this, the great horse knelt down on its forelegs, allowing Kara to climb up on its back. The saddle was so comfy, and the horse's mane would make good reins. The white horse leapt up eagerly, nearly swinging her off balance, and it neighed delightedly. "Whoa there, horsey!" She patted its neck. "Let's go see Fergus. Come on now. Come on." She pulled the horse's mane to steer its head toward her brother and gently used her heels to guide it. "Let's go. Come on, pretty horsey." But the horse didn't follow her commands. Instead, it turned towards the loch and began to walk slowly toward the water. "No time for drinking, horsey. Come on, this way." Still the horse would not obey, but gently padded towards the loch edge. Fergus, whose arm was aching a bit now and his tummy rumbled, looked around for his sister, and his heart froze when he saw her far off on the back of a beautiful white horse.
"Kara, get off the horse!"
Fergus suddenly remembered one evening a couple of years ago, sitting around the wood burner with his granny and granda. Kara was asleep, but his grandparents had let him stay up a wee bit later and were telling him stories of Loch Mask. "The loch is very beautiful, Fergus, but it's ne'er to be trusted. It's older than the town, the people, even the trees. The waters are dark and deep."
"How deep, granda?"
"Well, there are some that say the loch is bottomless. It goes on forever. And whatever's down there may not be of this world. That's why we fishermen respect the water always. We never go out in a storm, and never alone. If you respect the water, it'll give you fish and all will be well."
"What do you think might be down in the deep?"
"Well, my grandfather told me he'd seen something that came from those waters. The Ask Ishka, the water horse. It's an ancient, malevolent creature with magical powers to change its shape. It hunts for humans, especially we children, to drag them in and drown them. Then it eats them up."
You don't believe that, do you?"
"Well, my granda told me the Ask Ishka is clever. It doesn't show its real shape out of the water. See, when it's ashore, it takes the shape of the most beautiful horse, and all that come near it are cast under its spell. You want to ride it, you see, but you should never get on its back."
"Why not?"
"'Cause you can't get off. It has a magical saddle, and you'll stick to it like glue. Then it'll ride into the loch and no screaming or shouting or crying will make it stop. It'll ride you full into the dark loch and drown you and then transform into its real shape, devouring you whole. My granda glimpsed the horse one moonlit night and watched it sink down into the black water. Then he saw the body of a creature break the waves, like a serpent's body, rolling out of the water, all scaly and humped, before it disappeared and the loch was still again.
Has anyone ridden it and survived?
Well, they say Brian Boru, the ancient High King of Ireland, long, long ago, he rode the Ask Ishka and came out of the water alive.
But how?
Well, like all fairy creatures, there is one thing it cannot abide.
I know this. It's metal. It's iron.
That's right, my boy. Lucky for King Brian, he had his mighty iron sword with him. What a battle it must have been below the water. But King Brian walked out of that loch. He never said what the creature looked like in its real form, but he never disrespected the water again. So you be careful out there, you two, and always take the big iron backdoor key with you, just in case. Kara was getting very nervous as the horse came close to the water. Stop! Horsey, stop! You're going the wrong way! She dug her heels into the beast's side and pulled on the hair of its mane, but the horse would not obey. Its hooves were nearing the lapping water now, and Kara tried to climb off and jump down, but she couldn't move. She was stuck in the saddle. She tried to pull herself free, but the horse's mane began to swirl around her hands like water weeds, tighter and tighter until the mane gripped her like strong little serpents. Kara screamed, "Fergus, help me!" The horse's hooves were in the water now as it headed further into the loch. It did not turn its head, but fixed its gaze out at the deep water, and it quickened its pace. Stop! Fergus! Fergus, help me! Fergus was tearing down the shore to her now, his chest bursting, his tears stinging his eyes.
Kara, get off! It's the Ask Ishka! It'll drown you!
I can't! Fergus, I can't! Help me! The water was up to the horse's belly and getting closer to Kara's dangling bare feet. Fergus splashed into the freezing water and struggled out towards the sinking horse.
I'm coming! I'm coming!
His legs went numb, and try as he might, he couldn't kick. So he used his arms to pull himself through the water as fast as he could. When he reached the horse, he grabbed at its tail and pulled hard. The horse neighed loudly and swung its head around. Fergus saw its eyes burning with a green and furious fire.
Let her go! Let my sister go!
But the horse moved on, dragging Fergus through the water, Kara screaming on its back. Then Fergus felt the key, the cold iron knocking against his chest. He fumbled for it and held it out of the water.
Kara, get ready to swim for your life!
He took the key from around his neck and stabbed at the horse's rear. To his amazement, the key hissed as if it was a red-hot poker, burning through the horse's white hide, making its flesh sizzle and sear. The creature reared up out of the water, shrieking in pain. It bucked Kara off its back and she plunged into Fergus's arms, and the two of them turned and swam with every bit of strength they had towards the shore.
Don't look back, Kara. Keep swimming.
I'm so... Cold.
You could do it, Kara. Use your arms.
The children swam until they felt the rock beneath their feet. Pushing the water away with their arms, they fell shivering and exhausted on the shore. Fergus looked back. The horse was flailing in the water, huge plumes of steam surrounding it. It writhed and it writhed, sending waves surging towards the shore. Then it sank down into the water. Fergus swore he saw what looked like a huge scaly tail break the surface and then disappear into the inky loch. All was still. The mist rolled away, revealing the far-off mountains and the twinkling lights of the town nestled at their feet. It was twilight. The pipistrella bats flitted across the water as Fergus and Kara shivered their way back to the grandparents' cabin.
"Where have you been?" said Granny. "We've been worried sick, and you're soaked through."
Seated in front of the fire, wrapped in blankets and sipping hot cocoa, the two children were very quiet. Granny stroked Kara's hair until she seemed to relax. Fergus looked at Granda.
"I lost your key. I'm sorry."
Granda smiled. "It's okay, lad. We've plenty more, just in case." The next morning, the two children woke up feeling happy and healthy. It felt like what had happened the day before was just a dream. But from that day on, they stayed together by the water's edge and only went out on the loch with grown-ups. Fergus always carried a piece of iron with him near the water, even as a grown man. And Kara still loved horses, but never approached a horse without meeting its owner.
And the creature?
Who knows? I doubt it was destroyed. Something that ancient isn't easily killed. For all I know, it could still be there today, swirling in the dark waters of Loch Mask, waiting.
The end.
So, Leo, did you like that story?
Yeah, I thought it was fantastic.
It was a bit scary, wasn't it?
Oh, yeah.
What was your favourite bit?
Well, I liked the mysteriousness of the creature. Not much is known about it at all, and it could still be there, waiting for its next victim.
Indeed. And I think because we spent such a lovely time at Loch Mask, we had all of these stories and myths floating around in our heads. I'm sure I saw something break the surface of the water.
What?
I think it was a cormorant.
Oh, yeah, that makes a bit more sense. So that's it for this episode. We'd like to thank our lovely host, Walter, in Loch Mask, for letting us stay at his beautiful cabin. And we'll have a new guest teller coming soon.
And if you are enjoying our podcast, please leave us a review, follow us on social media, and tell your friends all about us. And
thank you so much.
You have been listening to Dragonfly Tales with Emily and Leo.
We hope you enjoyed our podcast, and we'll be back for another story coming soon. But until then, may the luck of the Irish be with you. Thanks a million.
Gurav Mila Mahagat.
Bye.
Our podcast is brought to you by Emily, Leo, and Andy at Dragonfly Tales. Join our Dragonfly Tales podcast group on Facebook. Find us on Instagram at Dragonfly Tales Pod. And follow us on Twitter at Emily Dragonfly.